Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, dear friends. I am so grateful to be here. So grateful to be in the presence of so many dear friends. Grateful to be able to do this practice. Grateful to be in retreat. Thank you, everyone, for participating in all of those things. So we are in retreat today. Excuse me. That's something that happens a few times a year. You might come here on a Sunday morning expecting a regular Sunday morning, and you find we're in retreat and everybody's really quiet and no one talks to you. And it might seem a little strange, but it's a really wonderful thing, actually, when you're in retreat. To be silent. When we're silent, we really relieve each other of the obligation of making kind of the usual social contacts and all of the little thoughts that come with that. Oh, should I do this? Should I do that? But instead, there's another kind of intimacy that arises, and it gets really quiet. It gets really quiet. The first day, everything's pretty busy. You bring all that stuff with you, and there's a lot of activity, and you're not used to the forms, and everything's a little scattered, but things quiet down. And by Friday this week, some of us have been here. This is our seventh day now. By Friday this week, I noticed it was so quiet. We were having our evening meal out on the porch, and just everyone was just there, eating, maybe taking time now and then to look at the lake. And I also notice moving around the building how quiet it is, how we kind of anticipate each other's movement sometimes. We'll get out of the way before the person arrives. And just all of these beautiful little interactions happen. And you may not know these people, you don't know their names, but you feel like you know them pretty well when you've practiced in that way with them. And it's such a supportive environment. You really feel held up. You really feel like you can let go a little of your cares and your troubles and your habitual ways of doing things because you're in a safe and simple place. So the silence really helps us. So I hope you'll indulge us when you find out that there's no tea in social hour today. Please come back next week and we'll talk to you then. We'll get all caught up, okay? So I'm leading this retreat, this Rohatsu retreat, which is celebrating the Buddha's enlightenment with Ben. And we've had a pretty good time. We've been lecturing on Dogen's Fuken Zazengi, or the Universal Recommendation for Zazen. Some of you are very familiar with it. Some of you probably not at all. I'll just give you a little background. The Fuken Zazengi was written by Dogen. And he was born, it's easy to remember when he was born, because he was born in 1200. So about 800 years ago, he was born in Japan, and he was a monk there. And he was dissatisfied with practice in Japan at that time. He thought it had become pretty lax, and people weren't getting through to the deep stuff that we come here for. We come here for the deep stuff, right? So he went to China. And he found some stuff he didn't like in China, too. He thought it was poor teaching, kind of corrupt practices, like people getting credentials they didn't really deserve. But he kept looking around, and he found a teacher named Ru Jing, who became his teacher. And one day, Ru Jing was giving a Dharma talk, and he used the phrase dropping off. And when Dogen heard that, he dropped off. He dropped off body and mind. That was his great awakening. It happened during a Dharma talk for him. So he had attained the Buddha way. And he went back to Japan. And the first thing he wrote there was this piece, the Fuken Zazengi. And then he refined it over the next 20 years or so. And he founded Eheiji Temple, which is still in operation. It's a very large training temple. And he developed a lot of the forms that they still use there and that we use here. And I found an interesting fact. There's actually a scroll of the Fukan Zazengi written in Dogen's own hand at Eheiji, which is pretty cool. I don't know if it's on display. Has anyone here been to Eheiji? Did you see Dogen's scroll?
I don't know, maybe or not.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so Ben and I divided the Fukan Zazengi into seven sections, and today I'm talking about the last section. And I'm going to give you just a little summary of what we've talked about so far the first 6 days, a little summary of the Fukan Zazengi. And of course, it's a very, very rich text. It seems like almost any sentence of it could be made into a full Dharma talk. And it has a lot of allusions, so you can't really summarize it. But so this is just maybe to jog your memory a little bit or give you the flavor of it. It begins, "The way is originally perfect and all-pervading." The way is originally perfect and all-pervading. And Dogen probably could have stopped there, because that's his thing. It's all perfect, it's all okay. That means this is it, this is as it should be, and that means that you are Buddha. You don't have to practice to become a Buddha. You're Buddha now. This is it. This is okay. So why do you need to practice? That was his burning question. If you're Buddha already, why do you need to practice? Well, maybe the fact that you're a Buddha is a little obscured. It's a little hard to believe sometimes. It's a little hard to access. We can forget it pretty often. So we need to practice so we can remove the things that obscure our view of the Buddhas that we are. If the least like or dislike arises, the mind is lost in confusion. Why is it so hard to believe that we are Buddha? Why are we so lost in confusion? He talks about how Shakyamuni sat 6 years before he became a Buddha. Bodhidharma sat 9 years after he became enlightened. So the best times to practice, these are Ben's words, are before you are enlightened and after you are enlightened. Those are great times to practice. Before you are enlightened, yeah, we get that. We have to remove these things that obscure our vision. But why do you practice after you're enlightened? Haven't you made it? Haven't you done the work? Well, to a Buddha, the practice and meditation, that's not work. That's not work. That's the expression of being a Buddha. That's what Buddhas do. They practice. They meditate. They sweep. They cook. They ring the bells. They do all of this stuff. And there's some beautiful language in here. Listen to this. "Therefore, put aside the intellectual practice of investigating words and chasing phrases, and learn to take the backward step that turns the light and shines it inward. Body and mind of themselves will drop away, and your original face will manifest." So put aside the intellectual practice. Quiet your mind. You come for the first day of Rohatsu, and there's so much going on, but it does quiet down. It does quiet down. And then you can learn to take the backward step. And that has a lot of meanings. A lot of meanings, learn to take the backward step. But to me, taking the backward step, that's letting it come to you. We're always taking that forward step. We're trying to find it. We're trying to find enlightenment. We're trying to find what we do. We're reaching for it. But what you need to do is take the backward step and let it come to you. You become so quiet. You quiet your mind so much that you can open it up. You open it to the incomprehensible. You open it so that you're open to things you don't even know what they are. But you let them in. You let them in. You let them in. And that's taking the backward step. And then we have Dogen's instructions for practicing Zen, starting with, a quiet room is suitable. He goes into some detail about postures. He tells us how to meditate. And the interesting thing is that right now on third floor, there's an introduction going on. And there may be meditation instruction right now. And we're pretty much instructing people the same way Dogen instructed people almost 800 years ago. We still do the same stuff. We sit in this posture, and we follow our breath, and we put our tongue against the roof of our mouth, and we focus. We focus. And we also teach a flavor of Shikantaza just sitting in our intro, which is part of it too. So these things we do here have all been refined over hundreds of years because they work. Once you have adjusted your posture, take a breath and exhale fully, rock your body right and left, and settle into steady, immovable sitting. Think of not thinking. Not thinking, what kind of thinking is that? Non-thinking. This is the essential art of Zazen. This is the Dogen we know and love. It's so simple, it's so subtle. But if you grasp the point, you are like a dragon gaining the water, like a tiger taking to the mountains. You are in your element. You are comfortable in your own skin. You will stop arguing with yourself. You really are Buddha. You'll let yourself be Buddha for the sake of all beings, because we're all Buddha. If I can let myself be Buddha, you can be Buddha too. Let's do it. And then he talks about skillful things that teachers do, like triggering awakening with a finger, a banner, a needle, a staff, or a shout. These are actions that cannot be understood by discriminative thinking. And I think what he's telling us here, that just Zazen is not enough. You need a teacher. You need a teacher to show you how to get out of your head. Zazen is not enough. A teacher is not enough. You need them both. And then there's a part about non-differentiation, which Ben talked about yesterday. There's no distinction between the dull and the sharp-witted. There's no distinction between lineages. And now we come to the last part, which is on your program. There's a lot going on here, and I could approach this from many different angles. But what I want to talk about is the encouragement, because I think Dogen encourages us here. And that's great, and it's kind of rare in Dogen, because if you've read him much, you know he's kind of a tough customer. He writes from the standpoint of emptiness, from an enlightened viewpoint. And it's hard to understand. On first reading, it probably won't mean anything. On second reading, you might get a glimmer, and you really have to go to morning study group and sit in a whole room full of people to figure out what's going on here. But occasionally, he kind of comes down to our level, and he talks to us. You know, our little selves, our little needy selves functioning here in this world, the selves that we love so much. He's talking to us now. He's talking to us now. We know that in a way the self is an illusion, but the self is part of the deal too, and that's where it begins. That's where it begins. You can't find no self unless the self resolves to do that. So he's talking to the little self here, and here's what he's saying. You can do this. You, yes, you can do this. Every one of you. And it's a beautiful message. And I know it's true. I know it's true because I've seen this happen again and again and again over many years, where people take up this practice and find deep meaning in it and take it with them and make the world a place which has more compassion and more joy. And so I'm glad that I get this part of the Fukan Zazengi today, because it's about encouragement and we have more people here. And also, the people on retreat will be going back out into the world pretty soon. So this is a pretty good time to take that message of encouragement. So I'm going to go through this line by line. It begins with, "You have gained the pivotal opportunity of human form. Do not pass your days and nights in vain." This is your life. This is your life we're talking about. And you only get one. Or maybe not. Maybe you get more than one. But either way, whether you're, you know, started as an insect and worked your way up and you don't want to go back to being an insect again, or whether you just get this one life, it's pretty darn important. It's pretty important to remind ourselves that this is a big deal here. That's one reason we bow. There are many reasons we bow. One reason we bow is to remind us of the importance of the task. You are taking care of the essential activity of the Buddha way. Who would take wasteful delight in the spark from a flintstone? You are taking care of the essential activity of the Buddha way. That means if you're doing this practice, if you understand what Dogen is saying, if you understand that practice and enlightenment are the same, and if we simply practice, we are doing the activity of the Buddha way, then it is okay. You know that this thing you called you is really not differentiated from all other stuff. Who would take wasteful delight in the spark from the flintstone? The spark from the flintstone stands for the brevity of human life. So this is kind of a harsh kind of encouragement. Life is brief. But why delight in this delusion of separateness? This delusion that we exist apart from everything else, this delusion which lasts such a short time, when we could delight in the whole of it, where we can delight in the interconnections throughout time and space between all creatures, where we see beyond our limited lives. Besides, form and substance are like the dew on the grass, the fortunes of life like a dart of lightning, emptied in an instant, vanished in a flash. Okay, time is short. Please, honored followers of Zen, long accustomed to groping for the elephant, do not doubt the true dragon. And this refers to two different stories. The first one you've probably all heard. It's from the Nirvana Sutra, actually. A king brought an elephant before a group of seven blind men. And he said, I want you to check out the elephant and, or check out this thing and tell me what it is. And one blind man touched the side of the elephant and said, it's very like a wall. Another touched the tail and said, it's very like a snake, etc., etc. And I just have to interject. I think this story is a little insensitive because it presents the blind man as being just totally helpless. And I'm sure that if the king had given them a little more time, they would have thought, well, this may not be the whole elephant, and they would have checked out the rest of it. And they would have had a pretty good idea of what the elephant was, and in some ways a better idea than we have, because they're right up there close. But be that as it may, it's a story that illustrates how easily we make conclusions based on our limited point of view. We see a little thing, and we think, oh, it's true of all things. It's human nature. That's what we do. We try to reduce reality to its component parts in order to figure it out. So that's our conventional way of being. Then the story of the true dragon, you may not have heard this one. There was a man in China a long time ago who really loved dragons. And his house was filled with little figures and paintings of dragons because he loved them so much. But he had never seen a real dragon. And one day a real dragon heard about this guy and said, oh, this guy loves dragons. I'm going to go visit him. So the dragon comes flying in and pokes his head through the guy's front window. And the guy totally freaks out. And he's never the same again because he can't handle the real dragon. So we're long accustomed to groping for the elephant. We're so comfortable doing that. And then when the real dragon shows up, we can't believe it. And we're scared of it. We're scared of it. This wonderful thing, sometimes we get glimpses of it and we go, oh, that can't be true. That can't be true. You know, low expectations tend to kind of protect you from disappointment, and we get really good at that. So here it is, the world is opening up. No, that can't be true. So, yeah, and it can kind of, I think it can kind of be that way about Zen practice. You know, maybe you come to Zen Center and you learn to meditate, and you go through the intro, and you do some retreats, and you find some really cool stuff happening, and you love it, and it's transformational. And you keep at it a while, and then something comes up. You know, you have something in your life, something really busy, and you stop coming. You stop coming. And then it kind of fades what you were doing here, because what we do here is so subtle. You can forget it when you go back out there. What was that thing? You need to be reminded all the time. That's why teachers say the same thing every Sunday in 1,000 different ways, because you and they need to be reminded constantly. But seen from this seat, from inside this building, we know that there's a better way. And when you're in this better way, you almost want to write a letter to your future self and put it on your bathroom mirror and read it every day that says, keep practicing, do not forget, do not forget. But you actually can write a letter to your future self that doesn't have to be like that. You can write a letter to your future self, and that's called vow. Vow. Devote your energies to the way of direct pointing at the real. Or another translation, exert yourself in the way that points directly to your original Buddha nature. So this is how to use your precious energies. Use your precious energies in this effort to get in touch with your original nature, with what is real. And I'm talking about the Zen path because that's what I know about. That is not the path for everyone. Perhaps you're checking things out and Zen will not ultimately be the path for you. That's okay, but find your path. Find your path. Revere the one who has gone beyond learning and is free from effort. This is about who you hang out with. Accord with the enlightenment of all the Buddhas, succeed to the samadhi of all the ancestors. Continue to live in such a way, and you will be such a person. You can have the same samadhi as all the Buddhas, all the ancestors, exactly the same. And if practice is enlightenment, you can be enlightened as they were when you do your practice. Enlightened practice doesn't mean perfect practice. Enlightened practice means you're doing the practice. The stuff is coming in, and there's a whole lot of it, but you're dealing with the stuff as it comes in. You're dealing with it. You're like, oh yeah, stuff. Okay, back to my breath. And then 5 minutes later, oh yeah, all stuff. Back to my breath. You're doing the work. Practice is enlightenment, the same as it was for the ancestors. Dogen said elsewhere that the Dharma is possible for everyone, men and women, noble people and people of humble birth, and both laity and clergy. He said, those who practice will attain the way. The treasure store will open of itself, and you may enjoy it freely. The treasure store will open of itself. You don't go and get it. You open yourself, it will open up, it will come to you. You make yourself empty, and you see what happens. So this spirit of inquiry runs through everything we do, this inquiry and curiosity. You have no idea what you're doing here. If you have an idea what you're doing here, that's going to get in the way. Be idealless. The treasure store will open of itself, and you may enjoy it freely. Another translation says, you may summit it at will. It's true. It's true. If you really see emptiness, you can bring it up. You can bring it up in your body. You can find it. You can summon it at will. And even if you're new, you can summon it at will in the sense that you can always do this practice. you can always do this practice. Because if you've done it some, you know how to do it, and you know it does you some good, right? There's kind of a direct correlation between meditation and well-being in my life. I don't know about yours. It's always there. No matter what happens, no matter how bad things get, no matter how long you've forgotten or how long you've been away, you can come back to it. You can summon it at will. So that is the last line of the Fukan Zazengi, but I would like to mention one more kind of encouragement that Dogen doesn't mention directly, but it's consistent with the Bodhisattva vow. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. And I'd like to introduce it this way. I talked about how in Rohatsu everything gets so quiet. And often the heart opens up in Rohatsu, really opens up, because you have time, you have space, you're in a really safe place, and you feel a lot of support. And one person said, I am just so grateful to be here, and I'm so grateful to all these people. I don't know most of them. I don't know their names. I'm so grateful just because they showed up. Just because they're here. They're here and they're doing the stuff. And that supports me so much. And it's true. Every time you come here, you're supporting other people. You're not just doing this for yourself. You're helping all of us. So that's the encouragement. Do it for others. Do it for others. A couple of examples of this. One, you've maybe heard me say this before. It's a little story that I just really like because it illustrates the point. About a long time ago, when I was at a center in Northfield, we decided to have a noon sit at our little tiny center. And so we would take turns opening up in the middle of the day, and I went one day to open up for an hour, and it wasn't real well attended. And I remember one particular day going in and opening up, and no one came, and I was sitting there, and I was getting really frustrated, and I wanted to go home, and it didn't seem like any fun at all. And I was considering doing that. I was considering just getting up and going home. And then I heard someone come in. And I heard them come in, and I heard them sit down in the row behind me. And suddenly, my whole day changed, because I had a reason to be there. And I sat, and it was great. And the person left before the end of the hour, and I never knew who that person was. I do not know to this day who that was, but I thank that person for supporting my practice. And all they did was show up. I don't know what they were doing on that cushion. I mean, they could have been fantasizing or whatever. I don't care. They showed up. They were there, and they really helped me. They really helped me. So we do this for other beings. My second example is about getting sleepy while you sit. Happens a lot, especially on long retreats, because you don't get quite enough sleep. That's part of the deal. And people sometimes ask me, what do I do about getting sleepy during Zazen? And I never really have come up with a good answer, except for one. And here's what it is. If you're sleepy and you're having a hard time practicing, practice for all sleepy beings. And what that looks like exactly, I don't know. I'll leave that to you. But if you practice for all sleepy beings, you can do it, right? You can do it, right? It's not just your problem. You're doing it to help others. When you enter this practice, you enter this community, you are joining the activity of the Buddhas. You are expressing Buddhahood. There are no distinctions. So, one of my favorite lines here, and this one is from a different translation, please, honored followers of Zen, long accustomed to groping for the elephant, do not doubt the true dragon. And I love it because it says, please, please, honored followers of Zen, please do this practice. That's been my mantra this morning. Please, honored followers of Zen, please join me. Please do this thing. Please make this effort. I know it's a little scary. I know the idea of dropping off body and mind is a little scary, but you'll still be able to have fun. The small self may go away for a little while, but it comes back. You integrate it in, and then there you are, here in the world of form, with an understanding of interconnectedness of all things. Form and emptiness are together, and it is a beautiful, beautiful thing. And everything is so alive, and all beings are in on it, all together. And you'll still have fun. You'll still be there for your partner. You'll still fulfill your responsibilities. You'll do all of these things better. I know it's a little scary, but come on, come on. You can do this thing. You can do this thing. This life matters. Let's do our very, very best. And I like the way it says, honored followers of Zen, I honor you all, no matter what stage you're at. And I would like to invite you to consider whether it might help to make a kind of vow. As Ben said yesterday, a vow concentrates our effort. And New Year's is coming, so it's the perfect time. And there are many kinds of vows for many kinds of people. They can be very vague. They can be specific. It might be, I'm going to sit 5 minutes a day. I'm going to sit 30 minutes a day. I'm going to go to Zen Center twice a month. I'm going to find a teacher. It could be, I'm going to keep this thing in my mind and I'm not going to give it a name. It could be, this thing is too precious to reduce to words, but I am going to carry it with me. But please do include other things in your vow. Vow to do whatever it is you're going to do for all beings. For all beings. That will liberate you. And you may say, Ted, I don't have time. And I understand. We go through those periods. I'm too busy. I have my work and my family. Or I've got these great responsibilities. I'm taking care of my aging parent. Or I'm taking my care of my kids. Or I'm doing this political work, which is so pressing. It's a funny thing about Zen people. They don't usually say, well, I don't have time for Zen because I have all these recreational things I love to do. They usually say, I've got all these responsibilities and I'm too busy doing good, you know, to do good for myself. But if you'll take some time for yourself to practice, you'll fulfill your responsibilities better. And the beautiful thing is, you can practice in any circumstances. Even if you're busy all the time, even if you're caring for an aged parent, and that's pretty much your life, and you're there day after day, week after week, there are ways to do this practice. You know, this practice isn't just sitting in Zazen facing a wall at Zen Center. There are many ways to do this practice. And if you don't know how to do that, ask a teacher. Ask a teacher. Call on the phone if you don't have time to come here. So please, honored followers of Zen, find a way. Find a way. If you're in those circumstances where you're so busy, it's going to be a challenge. It's going to be a challenge. But you can do this. You can do this. Dogen said that 800 years ago, and it's still true. And that's what I have to say, except there's one more thing I'd like to say, because this is the last day of Rohatsu. So I'd like to address the folks here who are part of the retreat. We're still in retreat this afternoon. It will end at 4 o'clock. It's a long time until 4 o'clock. And I know from experience how during that last day you might start thinking about what you're going to do after Rohatsu, because you have some pent-up stuff going on, right? But try not to go there. Try not to go there, because if you can stay here and stay in retreat and take this to completion, it'll be so much better when you get home, because you'll take that spirit of discovery and that spirit of being right here, you'll take that home with you when you walk in the door. And if you're thinking about home all afternoon, when you get home, you're going to get home to your idea of home that you've developed, and it's not going to be your real home, and you're going to have this real big disconnect. Stay here. Please do your best to stay here this afternoon for these remaining hours. And for those of you who aren't in the retreat, this applies to you too. As you move through your day, stay where you are. Don't get ahead of yourself. Don't live your life in the future. Live your life now. So that's what I have to say. And I think in keeping with our tradition, I am not going to take questions today. And I've talked for quite a long time anyway. So I'm going to turn this over to our esteemed Doan.